I'm Lauren Petrovic, host of the Responsible Luxury Podcast, where we bring together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders, and CEOs shaping the future of responsible luxury. Because simply asking questions, we can build connections and change the way we see the world. Here we go. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Responsible Luxury Podcast. I'm Lauren Petrovic, and today I'm catching up with the Isabelle Gromet. I'm excited to welcome Isabelle, a renowned leader and author of Business as a Force for Good, who continues to serve global organizations to transform their models for better futures. Throughout her career, Isabelle has worked with top CEOs and leaders to clarify their vision, actions, and governance to create value and meaningful impact at scale. She helps them transition to more sustainable models and develop the tools they need for creating and running businesses that have the power to change the world. Isabelle's unique gift is that she's a woman of action, but also a dreamer and visionary, which I respect so deeply. Since a young age, she's had a dream to change the world and impact millions of people's lives. Today, she continues to build that lasting legacy through her courageous leadership. Today, she's here to share the tools you need for transforming your business as a force for good. Please join me in my delightful conversation with Isabelle. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Very good. I'm so happy to be here with you, Lauren, on the Responsible Luxury Podcast. This is going to be an interesting talk.
Yes, I'm excited. We first met during Climate Week last September. And since the moment you were just a force of light and inspiration, a real mover and shaker, I had the pleasure of reading your recent book over the Thanksgiving holiday. And I have a lot of questions for you. Really excited to share your journey with everyone and dig into some of Goodness & Co.'s mission.
Wonderful. I feel lucky that our paths cross one another during the New York Climate Week.
There are very serendipitous, but always for a good reason. You have a really interesting story and background, which I want to share with our listeners today. I want to dive right into the book and start by talking about your childhood and you yourself from a young age. I was reading about you studying here in the States early on when you were just in high school. You've always had this quality where you've always learned to strive for improvement, go the extra mile, and turn challenges into opportunities and remaining resilient, which is always core qualities in every leader. So to kick us off, I wanted to ask you your personal journey and how that's influenced your vision for businesses as this force for good.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for your kind words. I believe that, yes, I can say that I've always been willing to contribute to a better world. Let's put it this way. I come from a family of scientists and sciences progress, or because I had the chance to discover the world. I believe so much that people can drive amazing things and drive things forward when they come together. But anyway, I've always wanted to contribute to a better future. My friends would even say to change the world, because I'm always very ambitious when it comes to projects that I drive. There are plenty of ways to contribute to a better world. I don't say that my journey is the right one. Huh? It's just mine. And I decided that I would go to business. And why? Because I'm a woman of action. I believe in action. I mean, we are today, you know, and we met at the Climate Week, know that we are past the point of pledges, we're past the point of talks. We want action, right? But this has always driven me. So it's about action. And I believe so much in the power of businesses to drive action and innovation forward that I've dedicated my life to that. I've always chosen companies that were doing good to society. So, you know, there are activities that are better than others. So I've always chosen them. Health of people, health of planets, this is my driver. I've worked in small family-owned business. At one point, when I was, I think, 30, 35, I was like, what's really, what impact do I really want in this world? Do I want to impact hundreds of lives, thousands of lives, millions of lives, billions of lives? I said, well, maybe billions. So if I want to impact so many people around the world, I have no other choice than to join a big global organization to drive the change. So this is when I joined Danone, and I led the transformation of Danone around the world for 9 years as the catalyst of change of Danone. It was quite impressive to really see how we were demonstrating at global level to create a movement and to create a virtuous model to contribute really to better futures. And in 2019, I must say that something was happening. When you have been working so many years in this field, you realize that something is happening. You don't exactly know what. So it felt like a tsunami. So like the thing you have been working for so many years is all coming together. For instance, at Danone, we were demonstrating that we were driving change at global level, that it was possible to create a net positive company, a company that was giving more than it takes. It was very impressive. A company that was impacting the health of people and the health of the planet while taking care of the health of the planet, being a global B Corp for the first time at this level, etc. At the same time, if you remember 2019, you had Greta Thunberg that started the strikes saying enough is enough. We want to change the model. Enough is enough. At the same time, you had a first business roundtable in the US where 181 CEOs were coming together to move from a shareholder to stakeholder economy. There were many things happening. And that day, I remember very well in 2019, in November, I was also part of a co-chair of a global organization called the Consumer Goods Forum, where I was reporting to a board of 58 CEOs. And I remember that day, the boardroom shifted, where the conscious CEOs of the world that used to be isolated, that day they became a majority. They understood they had no other choice than to put the positive impact at the core of the operating model. The question was not anymore about the why. The question was about the how. This is when I decided to create Goodness & Co. to serve organization on a mission and really to serve the courageous leaders of the world to shift purpose into practice. This is what Goodness & Co. is about.
And I want to stop right there and go back a bit and dive into this philosophy of shareholder versus stakeholder mindset. Can you explain this a bit in the beginning of your book, where in the 20th century economy, it was very shareholder driven, focused on those short term revenue goals and returns and value extractions, and more focus on competition. Now you're saying there's more prominence, these conscious leaders in companies where the economy of tomorrow is shifting and evolving in a bit into more of a shareholder economy. So tell the audience to dive deeper into that.
Yeah, I believe that time is now for business to be purposeful and therefore to demonstrate its contribution to society. And I believe, in fact, that companies with a positive impact will thrive, chosen by people, people being employees, consumers, partners, investors. And what does it really mean to create value for all? You know, it's for all your stakeholders. And when we look at them, you know, when we take them one by one, we know that it matters to them. For instance, on employees around the world, even though we are in a global economic crisis, 6 out of 10 employees are looking for companies that are supporting their own values. They want to contribute to something bigger than them. When you look at meaningful brands, for instance, 8 out of 10 consumers are looking for brands that are doing good. So meaning consumers are not just looking at brands. Of course, they look at price points. Of course, this matters. But there is also something that they look at is who's behind, how it is made. You know, and it's maybe not an element of choice, but it's an element of boycott. So this matters. And then when you look at partners, I would say that now conscious leaders are becoming a movement, not a niche. Companies are trying to embrace a more stakeholder approach and therefore to partner with others, because no company can change the system on its own. No. So on the topics where they, you know, have a contribution, where they can change the system, they are partnering with NGOs, with their competitors, with others to really change the rules of the game. whether you're talking about packaging plastic, regenerative agriculture, or working on sexual harassment, whatever the topic is, they partner with others.
You have a really good quote in the book regarding leadership. One of them specifically, and your concept of leadership is very deep and it's very fascinating. You initially started describing leadership as an individual who understands the ecosystem of their company, is able to set a course and a strategy and empower other people to join them for their progression for growth. Later on in the book, you also mentioned how leaders don't just dictate. Real true leaders light a torch for others to be able to find their own routes and avenues. And I absolutely love that because that is where authentic leadership and real change comes from. Empowering others around you, which I know is a core value for Goodness & Co. So I want to shift further along and talk more about creating purpose in companies. So you mentioned that purpose acts as a compass for everyone to measure their decisions against social and environmental commitments. A company with a mission deeply rooted inside the DNA of the company acts as a GPS, which doubles as a generator for progress. I resonate deeply with that. The power that you have is being able to be, you know, this very ambitious and courageous dreamer, but then also, you know, a very brave and courageous doer too. So it's a rare combination of both.
You know that one of my favorite quotes is
I saw that and
the world needs dreamers and the world needs doers, but above all, the world needs dreamers who do.
Yes, I very much believe in that to my core. So thinking about purpose being integrated into the DNA of businesses for long-term sustainability, there's a lot of these high-level hopes and dreams of companies. And you mentioned that it's important to find guidance from precise and quantifiable objectives. So commitment to a mission without clearly defined KPIs and metrics is, you said, it resembles more of a prayer than a roadmap. And I love this. Can you share with us more how you believe a company is able to really inject purpose into its DNA?
I believe in alignment. You know, alignment in life. It's like for people as well as for companies. So why purpose matters? You know, it's defining why a company exists beyond profit. Purpose without bringing it at the core of the operating model is useless, to tell you the truth. And I think that we are past the stage, even though there is still a lot to do. But I focus my energy on the one that are ready to bring that forward. So I'm going to maybe not speak to everyone, but this is where I take my energy and where I give my energy to serve the courageous leaders of the world that are ready to bring this purpose at the core of their operating model. So why it matters? Because people want to contribute to something bigger than them. That's the reality of life. You know, they want to be useful, if I may say. Yeah. And for that is how do you bring a purpose to life is about bringing it at the core of the operating model. Which means two things. One is as a compass of decision, and second is as a compass of engagement of all your stakeholders. So when we say as a compass of decision, if you have a purpose and you don't say, what does it really mean? You know, I won't give example of, but let's say I'm French, you know? So in this French stock exchange market, the biggest companies in France, I think 100% now have a purpose. Of the 40 biggest company in France, how many of them have a purpose at the core of their operating model? I would say probably around half of them. Why? Because it's not so easy. The reality of life is that you have a purpose and then you have the sustainability roadmap handled by the CSO who's trying to do his or her best, driving all those KPIs outside of business. The reality is not that anymore. We need to put purpose at the core of the operating model to define what it means to contribute to society. Of course, you will continue to have all those KPIs that are relevant, necessary for all the regulation on environmental, human rights, etc. But your purpose, bringing that to life as a compass, is really the key indicators that matters to you. So whether it's for the planet, for the people around you, for your performance of your activities, you know, how much do you want to bring your activity forward and help your activity, it's the virtuous growth also that matters. It's about defining this compass of decision and bringing that at every instance of key decision making. When you do a business review, you look at this compass. When you do a brand review, you look at this compass. When you do external growth, you look at this compass. It's not once a year you look at it and then you tick the box. No, it's you look at it as a compass of decision about what will your portfolio look like in 10 years from now in regards to this compass. Do we have still the same portfolio of brands, of products, of services? Should we shift them a little to bring sustainable business? And that's absolutely fundamental for me to bring that at the core of every decision-making process. That is key.
And you mentioned earlier about alignment with leaders inside a company and how purpose has to be at the core of a company. And I'm thinking about when an individual becomes aligned and you live very closely, you live out your values and you live out your purpose. How beautiful would this world? Imagine a world where everyone knew their purpose deep to their core. And then they were able to apply that to their career, their company, their startup, their business. It would really change the landscape of social orders and everything else. I think that's a really important concept for people to grasp when you say alignment and being close with your values. So shifting gears a bit, I want to ask you about how the responsible luxury industry is evolving, particularly in relation to jewelry. My day-to-day, my company Laurenti, my vision for the jewelry industry is it can really be an engine for more of that economic, social, and environmental growth and sustainability. Where are you seeing the jewelry industry going?
The way I look at things is I look at the pioneers, the frontrunners, the ones that are demonstrating that it is possible, or the courageous leaders, as I like to say. This is my area of focus. Why? Because I think they are demonstrating that it is possible. If I look at the luxury industry overall, I believe that there is something happening around trust. For instance, Gen Z, if I remember well, 80% of them says that it is more than ever so important to trust the company that are making their product. And trust is absolutely critical. So trust is about the way you do things. You're not just what you deliver, but the way you do things. Yeah. It's okay not to be perfect, but it's very much about acknowledging that you're on a journey to become better every day and to do better things every day. It's about to life, bringing your purpose to the world, aligning your decision around that, but also about aligning your action around that. And we've seen in the world, you know, some amazing leaders like Kering that we know very well, was the incredible leader of Marie-Claire Daveu, who has led this so far with, for instance, you know, they were the first one to implement the EP&L to look at things and to guide their decision. They were also, I don't know if you've seen lately, but they have built, for instance, the Climate Fund for Nature with L'Occitane to start with. So yeah, they are on the way. They are demonstrating that it is possible. Or you can have also leaders like Chloe that were the first one, and we're very pleased that we have been able to serve them, to welcome and to become the first luxury brand to become a B Corp, and more to come right now, like Mulberry and others. So I think that a lot of things are happening right now.
You have a lot of good use cases with companies that you work with. I was reading about IKEA, Chloe, which I was amazed by. I had no idea they were B Corp. Natura & Co, Rituals, and then even Patagonia. I think most surprising to me, I was reading about the founders of Patagonia and their family decided to trade in their shares and decision-making, which I think the valuation on that was $3 billion worth of for the company. That goes to show a really example of courageous leadership, right? Thinking more about the jewelry industry and where we are today, I think the overall consumer's narrative with the jewelry industry is a little bit lack of trust, transparency for sure. How might you see changes start to evolve when it comes to the broader luxury industry? Mm-hmm. Do you see any interesting new initiatives or startups today?
I see courageous leaders able to deliver to make the shifts happen. I see, as I just mentioned, like Kering, Mulberry, Chloe, that's some of them. I see some that have started the journey or are starting the journey, like De Beers. Natural Diamonds is very new on this journey, if I may say, or new to really capture, share the journey of progress, if I may say. So I see a lot of movement around that. And what gives me a lot of hope is that the luxury industry is coming together. I believe that no company can do it on its own. And as we need to reinvent the way we do business, coalition is becoming the new norm. And in that sense, you know, several years ago in 2019, we had the Fashion Pact, if you remember. With Kering again, that really brought together, I think, more than 160 brands that were, you know, sharing best practices, but also committed to doing more and more in that sense. So it was the beginning. And now you see more initiative coming up, like the Watch and Jewelry initiative that you are aware of, you know, where we met with Kering and Cartier. It's a more pioneer platform working on really helping companies to learn from others, but also to gear up or to build their capabilities on that. And to, because the question is really about the how. I think that leaders are more and more conscious. With leadership comes responsibility. They know that they have to go there, whether they want it or not. It's another topic. But yeah. I think that people are willing to do good overall. So I think that it's more about how do you reconcile positive impact and performance. What is the first step? How do you build coalition? This is the main question today.
Yes. Your clients that you're working with, thinking about the force of Goodness & Co., how I'm thinking about the work you guys do and reading into the book, I believe that it's almost easier for startups. They have a fresh slate, right? You might be dealing with these legacy companies that's been established for 25, 50, 100 years, but then you have startups that are
mission native.
Very, yes, very innovative, very focused on actually making real impact. Do you find, and I'm sure you work with both sides, but let's say you have a very antiquated company coming to you and say, Isabel, the stakeholders, we really want to shift our company to be more sustainable and build our company for the future. How do you go in there and what is your process of doing that?
That's a very good question. So first of all, I must say that our area of focus is more larger companies or medium company size. We don't work with startups. Why? Because, there are a lot of things that are happening, and I don't think startups really need it. Because, as you say, they are mentioned natives. Our intention, because I've been working in that field for 30 years, is that I'm fully conscious about the challenges we are facing in the world. So I believe that we will succeed at the level of speed and scale that the world needs if large companies are shifting gears and are becoming a force for good. Our intention with Goodness & Co. is really to serve the pioneers of each category to help those courageous leaders shift purpose into practice. And it's the snowball effect for the rest of the industry. So how do we select and how are we chosen and how do we choose the clients, if I may say, is probably around three dimensions. The first, believe it or not, it's about the leader. The leader being the CEO, whether it's a man or a woman, we look at him or we look at her, asking ourselves, do we believe that this individual is a courageous leader? It's not easy, right, to assess such.
It's very intuitive.
Very intuitive. I believe this is the fundamental thing because we're in business and it's all about people. And the reality is organizations don't drive change. No, it's people who do. So, and it all starts with leadership. The rest, if the leader is not in, useless to reinvent a model. Second dimension that we look at is how much the category. Is it a pioneer in the category? You know, we have worked in several areas, but we really want to help the pioneers of the categories that are ready to shift the gear, if I may say, and the rules of the game. So we look at the category, how much the category can contribute to a better world, or if not, can be really reinvented in the way they do things. Yes, we look at the openness of the leadership team to really reinvent the rules of the game. And last but not least, because otherwise it will fail, is how much the leadership team is ready to set up a more collaborative and inclusive governance. Because the reality is that there will be no transformation without collective governance.
I want to dive deeper into that point because there was many good points you made about boards and how to reinvent, not reinvent the boards, but thinking about the new generation of the role of boards. Something that spoke to me in that same chapter was to act and to act well, one must first and foremost listen. And it was very timely because I was recently at a holiday party this week and I was speaking to a gentleman who was a hedge fund manager for many years. And he was saying, there's no impact what I do with my job. He goes, it's just investing and it's just black and white money. I was telling him, you don't realize how much impact you guys have because money is the energy that moves the world. It's the money that is able to make a lot of these changes happen in social initiatives and environmental initiatives. Going back to the boards, you were mentioning that the board of directors is really important. It's very important to also have diversity. So when I think about boards, I think about very older, very wise people with a lot of experience. But you said it's important to have younger, perhaps less experienced people that have a pulse on society and the problems going on today. So I want to ask you if you can dive deeper into selecting boards. You know, maybe we might have a listener on here who is on a board of something or maybe is forming a board for their company. What are things they should look out for? And maybe they're trying to change their board. What are some actions they could do?
As you're saying, the boards are playing a pivotal role. And we do at Goodness & Co. work a lot with the boards because we believe that they're critical. And for that, more and more, because, you know, the board are accountable of ensuring sustainable business. When you look at, for instance, the way it's split, so the board should spend at least 50% of their time on long-term business, 20% on midterm, and 30% on short-term. It is exactly the opposite of an executive, of a CEO. You know, he or she should spend 50% at least on the short term, et cetera, et cetera. So they are really here because they are accountable of making sure that the business will be sustainable. So that is pretty key. I think that more and more board are conscious, board members. But the reality is that 70% of them recognize that they are not efficient when it comes to bringing ESG at the core of strategy and governance. They don't really know how to do it, as you say, because they don't have the experience. It's pretty new and it's complex. It's a complex role to be a board member. As you mentioned, I must say that it's, as always, it starts with people. So who do you have around the table? Do you have a diverse crowd? You know, it's a gender balance. Is it geographical balance? Is it background, you know, representing all your stakeholders? This is key. Do you have this around the table? So you don't have always the same profile. That's number one. Second is about how much do you really integrate this at the core of the agenda? You have the CSO coming and explain the sustainability strategy, and then you tick the box. Okay, we looked at all the risk behind, etc. Or do we have strategic session about how should we transform the business model to build more sustainable business? And therefore, it's moving from a stakeholder approach again. And this requires strategic session. This requires time. This requires that it's not a one time, but that you have collaborative strategic approach. And it's always about asking the right question. You know, what does our portfolio looks like in 10 years from now, given the challenges that we are facing in the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Are you more of a short-term goal or long-term goal kind of person? Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that?
That's a very good one. I had a conversation with Martha in our team this afternoon. I'm very much a vision person. So I'm very much about the long-term goal before starting. And while some people prefer to have very short-term goals that are clear.
Yes. And how do you find, like, I know a lot of people today struggle to reconcile that because especially if you're a CEO or a founder, you have to be both, you have to be thinking of the long term, of course, but you also have to be thinking about today and focusing on the 1 to 3 year goals. Have you found any good solutions to reconcile those two?
I think that, I mean, it's a philosophy, if I may say. my contribution is to serve the courageous leaders in the world to reinvent their model. So I better be pretty good at the vision to help them stretch their mind, making sure that they envision this model of the future in the way they reinvent their model. And then to make it work, the key I use is to build more collaborative governance and to make sure that in those governance, and that we do that for every client, is we build governance that are with internal people, but also external people to make sure that they learn from one another. We also build a governance model steering committee with experienced people, but also the next generation. It's all about diversity in a broader sense. And collectively, if you are good at managing the governance, then you land into the vision that you had at the beginning.
I want to ask about board members and setting strategy for your business. You were talking about integrating carbon footprint into investment strategy. And I found this to be very interesting. You gave some examples of BlackRock, how they're more focused on investing in companies that have those strong ESG goals and results. Can you tell us, there was something in there you mentioned about green bonds and sustainability bonds and how there really needs to be some more robust policies in place, which I agree, to also help businesses and entrepreneurs thrive. But also to balance that, you mentioned that there needs to be robust policies. And then there was also tax credits to incentivize some of these companies. So tell us some examples that you've seen, big companies incorporating these greener initiatives.
So if I may say, as we reinvent the way we do business, we need to reinvent incentives. If you reinvent the models, have a great purpose, but you just do business as usual, manage and monitor your P&L the same way as before, it doesn't work. If you finance the same activities as before, if you don't have an extra help, if I may say, incentivize the virtuous model, it doesn't work. So I don't think that from my experience so far, there is a one size fits all, but I think that there are various ways. And I think that actually finance, and that's the point in the book, is what is the financial incentives, basically, to make that happen. Yeah. And I think that finance are playing a huge role right now. I think that it lies a lot on their shoulder and their ability to succeed that shift. Because I believe that we are moving from a regular profit and loss to more, how do we create value for all? So how do you monitor that? So how do you finance that? This is related to, as you mentioned, you know, you have plenty of mechanisms like the sustainability link bonds, you know, how much the, when will governments really help and incentivize the companies that are more virtuous than others? For instance, we had some tax in the food industry regarding sugar and fat. Well, what is coming next? It's a challenge because it needs to be global because of competitiveness. This is the challenge that we're facing. As we know, there are various interests, but there are things that are happening or also specific financial mechanism regarding, you know, specific impact funds that are related also to the future of your business. How do you act with others? We see more and more coalitions when it's regards to impact funds to change the system. That is really key. There is not just one model. There are plenty of ways. And I think the CFOs are playing a critical role. And much more is coming up, I think, in the following couple years.
Yes, I agree. That's why we need more thoughtful leaders, perhaps, in those seats making those decisions. Yes. So looking ahead, I want to ask you advice as we look ahead these next 5-10 years for the landscape and companies, specifically the luxury industry. What advice would you give to other luxury brands looking to transition towards a more sustainable business model? You mentioned just gender equality. I think there was a data point in the book. It was 132
years. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
The pay gap. And I think it's, I mean, that was really quite astonishing to me.
Maybe to explain to all the auditors, so the point is that if we don't change anything, we will have to wait 130 years to be really equal between men and women. Yeah.
So thinking more about companies looking to transition, what is the first step for some of these companies? I know people who run independent type businesses, your SMEs, and then also leaders in the bigger corporate world. What's the first step that people can take?
First is, let's say that just go for it. It's okay if it's not perfect. Just go go for it. Time is now. And leaders, examples, you know, I think that in this book, I think that more than 50 cases. So you know that it is possible. Just go for it. That would be my first and foremost advice. And then how to start? What would be the first step? I think that it all starts with the purpose. If you don't know where to go, it's going to be challenging. Change is not easy, so you better know where you want to land.
Yes, you have a good quote in the book that I really love. It said, "We all have the power to awaken the conscious of the world." I love that so much because I think that it's often forgotten. I think a lot of us, humanity in general, forgets the power that we have as people, the power of connection, the power of what businesses can do, right? For me, I view courageous entrepreneurs, founders, CEOs of companies is you have a company that's able to generate like real results in local communities. And for me, working in the world that I'm in, I think it's an incredible tool to generate lasting impact over generations. When I think about jewelry, it's a vessel, it's a tool for
eternity.
For eternity, spanning generations, right? It has incredible social impact. I think that some of my intentions behind what I'm trying to do here in New York is giving back to local foundations and communities. There's a local foundation here, the New York Women's Foundation. Another one is God's Love We Deliver. So especially around the holidays now, there's a lot of consumer shopping, a lot of sales. How can companies give back to their local communities? Another question for you is thinking of brands wanting to become more symbols of sustainability. How do you see this? Because you spoke to this a little bit in your book. Now I think consumers are more wise. They want products that transcend just a physical product. They want to be connected to it. They want it to be an extension of self, right? How do you see companies becoming that symbol? And what can they do to start to craft that?
So I think that time is now for brands to step up. They can become symbols of a better world. I believe that consumers are looking for that. So as I was mentioning, I think that the first step is about defining your purpose, what you stand for in the world, what will be your contribution to society, and choose where you have a possibility to act, to contribute, to partner, to thrive. It's about really, it's the ikigai, you know, it's the same. So it's really about embracing where you are good at, where you can contribute, and where you would love to help. So they start with that.
Yes. And I also wanted to touch on, you mentioned a question that you asked yourself early on. And it's funny because I remember from a young age, I used to ask myself this question too. And it is, if you were sitting at your funeral, what's something that you would want people to say about you? I'll let you answer what you had written, but it really resonated with me because I think that we're here for a very short time. I believe as humanity, our purpose is to really help progress and help our local and global communities flourish. And thinking not about this generation, but how can you help build for the next generation? Mm-hmm. So starting with, you said something, you wanted to leave something for your kids. How would you answer that question?
That's a challenging one, but very natural for me is that I'm fully conscious about the challenges the world is facing. I think that life is full of choices, right? And I'm not saying that choices are easy to make, huh? it's I believe even harder to make choices. It is more challenging to make choices rather than not making any choices. And I think that actually, if you want to really make choices, then there will be no transformation without courage. Without courage, because sure, courage is the fortitude of heart, the strength of heart, the fortitude that manifests in challenging moments that helps you make this choice. And if I look back at what I want my legacy to be, is that, yes, I want to say that in 10 years from now, with my 5 kids at home, I want to say that I will be able to look at them in the eyes and say that I have done everything I could at a time when it really mattered.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I really love that. I can only imagine what they think of you as an incredible role model and mother. It's a big challenge. And as a mother, you see the world through a different lens. When you're a parent, you think about your kids and the world they're going to live in. They're extensions of you. So you want them to live in a more beautiful world. So Isabel, as we come to a close, I wanted to ask if you have any last comments or ideas to leave off. This is the first, but certainly not the last podcast we're going to do together. If you could paint a picture for the next 5 years, what's something that you would want to leave?
I believe that people can change the world. And I believe that as leaders, as individuals, we have always a choice to embrace this revolution or to be left behind. I think that one thing is sure is that there will be no transformation without courage. So we have 10 years. I count on you, please.
For listeners today, where is the best place for them to connect with you after today's episode? Whether that's email, I can drop your social handles in the show notes below.
The best way to reach me is through LinkedIn.
Amazing. Okay. I'll be sure to add those notes there. Isabel, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again soon, I hope, when you're back in New York or perhaps next time I'm in France. Thank you so much for your time and your incredible leadership.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I feel so grateful to you. And thank you for all those questions. I see that you have read the book. Thank you.
For anyone interested in Isabel's book, Business as a Force for Good, I'll make sure to include the link to purchase in the show notes below. It's a wonderful read and you'll definitely enjoy it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Responsible Luxury Podcast. I hope you'll pick up a copy of Isabel's book, Business as a Force for Good. I hope this conversation with Isabel inspires you to approach your business with newfound purpose and vision to create more positive change in the world. I invite you to rate, review, and follow all of our episodes, which are available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, thank you for listening and see you next time.